these right here, so. Oh, we topped it.
Whoa,
he cold topped it.
Okay. Try to get up. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by Kevin and Mark, and we've got a guest with us today, Mr. Hayden Stanistreet Tyre. Did I get that right?
Yeah, good effort.
How are we, brother?
Yeah, good, man. You?
Yeah, man.
All
yeah.
good, all good. How's things at the moment with the lockdown situation?
Yeah, it's good. It's just, obviously, it's difficult for everyone. Like, just trying to stay busy. Like, I love a routine. I love getting up. I love, like, going to practice, going to the gym, coming home, doing mobility work, going to bed. That's like me every day. So all of a sudden, you can't go out of the house. You're having to go on walks. You know, it's different.
Do you find yourself doing more like of the fitnessy type regime now than you ever done before?
Like for me, I've always loved getting into like proper, like everything about golf I love. So like the fitness side I've always loved as well. It's just like now, obviously you've got a bit more time to focus on that. And me and my brother are quite lucky to where since the first lockdown last March, we made a little project in the garage to build up a gym.
Nah, yeah, a few people got them little home gyms.
Yeah, so it's like we spent a little bit of money on it, but it's worth its weight in gold at the minute, you know.
Yeah,
and that's it. I've just signed up for the 5K a day for 21 days.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And me body, legs. Honestly, like I wish I had some sort of weights to be doing because I wouldn't have signed up for that challenge. Don't reckon. Even if it is for the kids, I would have just donated and be done with it.
Well, like especially at the minute with the weather, you don't want to be going outside for too long, do you?
Oh, mate, it's freezing.
Layered up.
It is freezing cold. Yeah.
You need to time the run so then you're getting to a point and getting back to the warmth. Because I finished the day on the canal and I had to walk up this big hill and the wind was getting me. I was freezing. I had to run again.
So you getting much practice in at all? Just back garden stuff, swing speed?
Yeah, so I've got a net at home. So I'm quite lucky as well. I've got a Flightscope Mevo.
Okay.
That tracks all my yardages. I can do a lot of yardage work on that.
The little thing, is it?
That's it, yeah. So I haven't got the Pro or the Plus or whatever it's called, but I've just got the normal one. It hasn't got a camera on it, but it's got the radar. So it picks up the exact yardage of what you're hitting. And then it's ideal as well because obviously everyone at the minute's going about swing speed and ball speed, swing speed. So it's interesting to kind of peg it up in the back garden and scare the neighbours with the driving.
What is your swing speed? Because for the listeners listening, me and Hayden have played a few times, like, and he's like 6'5", big monster, and I've outdrove him a good few times playing with him, like, not going to lie. with me broken pink shafts.
I think it was once, was it?
We're going to have to fact check this.
No, because the reason I'm saying it, because he even went to me, yeah, you know, pink shaft goes all right, doesn't it?
I was doing when I got home that day. I was doing research into it and everything.
See if it was legal.
Hayden, you're out of bomber, aren't you? What is your swing speed?
So before winter, it was about 118, 119. That was like my coasting speed, but I've got it up now. I've got it up about 4 or 5 miles an hour. So
yeah. And what's the ball?
Yeah, so ball speed's getting like mid 180s.
Wow, yeah. We had a challenge. I don't know if you've seen it on our Instagram, and I couldn't have swung it any quicker. I'm at 163, I think. Did I get 163?
That's not bad though. There's lads on tour. Like I was listening to a podcast yesterday, that Robert Rock did with Earn Your Edge, and he was talking about how.
Can you just not plug any other podcast?
Oh, sorry. Thank you. He was saying that when he goes at one, he's getting it like high 160s. So, you know, like there is guys on tour, and obviously he's got the best swing on the planet as well. So.
Oh, yeah. Have you done 200 yet?
I haven't quite got there. The quickest I've got club heads 136.
Wow, so, that's so fast.
Yeah,
so
like,
fast.
I have to have a lie down after that.
Are you using the speed sticks, or are you just literally going trying to swing faster and just with more technique?
So yeah, it's something. So over the past year, I've been doing quite a lot of work with my coach, Gareth Benson.
Oh, yeah.
He's based at Formby Hall as well.
Yeah.
we're doing quite a bit on downforce, which again is like the latest craze, isn't it, at the minute? Like using the ground to create force. And
yeah.
So
about 18 months ago, we got a guy from down south, Steve. He came up with his force plates.
What's his name? Steve, what? Do you know? I actually was mad because I watched a video with him and this guy that we had on the podcast yesterday talking about all the ground force plates and all that sort of stuff. Must be the same guy. But
yeah, so he's the Gasp force plates that you see Bryson using with his
coat. Yeah, yeah.
They're his force plates.
Oh, right, okay.
Do you know what? He actually messaged that. He actually messaged, didn't you know? And I was like, what's ground force, mate? Honestly, I think we have to fact check this one, but I'm going to have to get that message up.
So I've been doing, for about a year, I've been working on that with Gareth. And then the guy who does all my gym program as well, Charles Marshall, he's down south. We've, over the winter, we set a plan to get strong, see what we can get out of, like work on speed, see what we can get out of the like swing speed and stuff. And then obviously it's increased quite a bit over the winter, which I'm happy about.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we'll be taking Bryson on soon.
Definitely, yeah. Same size as him, nearly.
Yeah. Do a few more Jaffa cakes and a few more crumpets. We'll be there.
Working on them gains, yeah, definitely. Yeah, man. So just going on the actual podcast that we're going to be doing today, it's the professional route. We've had a number of different professionals on. We just want to talk, get a bit of insight into your amateur career, why you got into golf, why you started, and we obviously know where you're up to now and what your plans are for the future.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Spain, moved there when I was 9. Just my family always wanted to move out there.
Oh, nice.
So me and my little brother went with my mum and dad, moved to Spain, a place called Soto Grande, which is in the south.
Yeah.
I didn't take up golf till I was, like, I had a swing on the driving range and stuff, but I didn't properly take it up and go for lessons till I was 14. Mm-hmm. My granddad was a scratch player back in the day.
Yeah.
He played like to a decent level, played in like county events and stuff. So, he was my first coach.
Was he? Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, no one else in my family really got into it. My brother dabbled with it when he was younger as well. But yeah, it was just my granddad. He kind of gave me his old set of blades, stiff shaft. Off with them.
Start, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you don't get easy from there, though, can it?
That's what I mean. I still use blades now. So, that's probably why I find them like quite easy to use. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, Have you tried changing to like a cavity, or have you just always stuck with the
blade? At the minute, I've got like a combo set. So yeah. I go blade up to a 6, and then 5-4-3. I've got just like a little combo.
Yeah, I used to.
There, a little bit cold in the morning, and you just
yeah.
Do you ever remember the Nike Pro combos that came out?
Yeah.
I had a set of them when I used to think I was good at golf. So I used to love getting shorter blades. I was in ripping them and thinking, yeah, I'm all right in this game.
So I was
Spain growing up then. Obviously, 14, you started playing golf there. So what was that like over there?
Yeah, it was good. Obviously, the weather over there is unbelievable.
Well, better.
Like, so, yeah, so to start playing and, yeah, so you get like, say, 10 months of the year where it's just unreal, like 20 degrees. And then the other couple, it's a little bit rubbish. You get a bit of rain and stuff, but yeah. Still way better than over here.
No, definitely.
So, I just grew up doing group classes at one of the local clubs and then decided to just keep playing. I was playing football at the time as well, but obviously golf took over.
Yeah.
Do you know, over the year when you're like an amateur and you'd like, say, for instance, now, like we're off an all right standard, you can go and play like Northern Order of Merit, or you've got your club. Obviously, you're a member of a golf club or whatever. Have you got anything like that? So once you want to progress out your club to go and play other...
In Spain, yeah. So they'd have like pretty similar setup to over here where they wouldn't have like the Northern Order of Merits where it'd be from different counties. They'd they just have like your county events.
Yeah,
it'd be like a ranking in the county, and then obviously the best players go and play for the county or the region in like a more national event.
Yeah. And then what was it? So was it determined based on your handicap to get in the bigger amateur event, or could you get?
So they obviously had a cut off for like all the Spanish national events and stuff. So even if you weren't playing for the county, let's say if you had a handicap of like plus one, plus two, you could still get into the national events.
Yeah.
Right.
And what was it like over there with the handicap system? Because I know obviously we in the UK now we've changed to the world handicap system, but in Spain it's been like that, I imagine, throughout the time you were over there.
Yeah, so ever since I started playing, it was on a slope system.
Yeah.
Which obviously, like, you guys have just, or the UK has just moved on to now.
Yeah.
I never really struggled with it. You know, it was that you get to the first tee and it was all there for you. You just put your exact in and it'd give you how many shots you got on the course. So yeah. It never really, even if it was a bad weather day, it never really altered too much. You might get a shot either side. And then when you...
Yeah.
So when you come over here and then you get like a bad day and then the standard scratch, you go up to like 77.
Yeah, I used to love them days.
It's like, what?
I used to love them days when I'm shooting a net 78 and I'm buffering.
Yeah. So it was a bit mad. It took me more getting used to when I came back over, you know, getting used to standard scratch. And then over there, a lot of the golf courses you play on is Bermuda grass, which is similar to what they play on in like Florida and stuff.
Yeah.
And did you move back over as an amateur? And what age did you move back over?
Yeah, so I stayed out in Spain till I was 21. Moved back to the UK because all my family moved back. And then did a year and a half as amateur over here. Played in all the like Northern Order amount stuff. And then just decided to turn pro going through the PGA.
But before you actually got back between 14 and 21, what did your handicap sort of look like? Like, were you a quick progressor or what did you do?
I found it quite easy to get down into like category one level.
Yeah.
And then I'd stayed, I think when I was like 16, I got down to like three. Which are like,
that's 2 years, isn't it?
Yeah, not half.
So if you think like some guys over here, obviously at 16, like playing for England. Yeah, of course, whatever. But obviously, because I started a little bit later. But once I got to 16 and got to three, I stayed there for a couple of years, which was a bit disheartening at first.
Yeah, you think that's disheartening? I was off five at 13. I'm 32 now, and I'm still off five.
Without the new handicap system, he was looking on going up to six as well.
So it's helped you out a little bit. You saved a few.
Yeah, sorted me out. I actually wanted a few more shots to make me a bit more competitive, but never mind. Sorry, mate, you were saying?
Yeah, so I've stayed there for a couple of years, got a bit disheartening.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you come tumbling down again, so it's not...
And then there's kind of... a quick progression to get down to your scratch and your plus handicaps from there, was it?
It's kind of like once you get to... Even at 18, I was still like one or two. And then, yeah, just kind of finished school at 18, just did it every day. I'd live quite close to the golf club anyway. I didn't drive until I was just after 19.
Yeah.
For the first year, I'd like walk to the golf club and then realised, like, I need to get a car.
Oh, yeah, and he's gone before you've
been in the fucking Spanish heat as well.
Yeah. So it'd be like 35 degrees and I'm there with the golf clubs on my back trying to walk.
Mom, can I have a lift home? No, it's siesta time.
It was all right. Came tumbling down and then decided to move back to the UK.
Tumbling down mean?
So I got to plus two in Spain.
Yeah, did you?
How
nice.
So it's not as low as what I'd want it, but
yeah,
in the past.
That's it. Shows you're shooting under par, at least when you're there to get to plus two, doesn't it? So
yeah.
Whenever you're shooting under par, you're going to compete, aren't you?
Yeah, that's it. So it's good enough as well, because I played in some good events over there, some good amateur events. So that was good experience, you know.
How did you compete in them?
Yeah, so first of all, like when you first start playing, it was a bit of a shock to the system, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're playing against guys who are off like plus six in Spain because of the slope and stuff. And it's like, because I was still quite new to the game, it was quite intimidating, you know? Like, you didn't really, instead of just playing the golf, you worried about what someone at other lab was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you instead of focusing on your own game. So it's tough.
That's perfect advice for anyone listening, because we've heard this a few times. Just about golf, stay in your lane. Hudson Swafford said it, a few others have said it, like, just do you, work on your stuff and stay in your lane. Is that perfect advice for anyone listening?
So easy to pay attention to what other people are doing, and especially now, like obviously everyone on social media is like swings it like Tiger Woods, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like just stay on your like path, work as hard as you can. Don't pay attention to anyone else. Just focus on what you can do.
That was what Lee Crumbholm said as well. He said the only advice that you should really take, or bad criticism, sorry, that you should take is off people that you'd actually take advice from.
That's it.
That was really, really good thing to say. That.
There's so many like different opinions flying about, and it's easy to listen to other people, you know?
Well, Tiger, you obviously go to the gym, don't you? And it's, remember, people were saying, you don't eat in the morning. Then you do this faster cardio, then everyone's like, if you don't eat in the morning, then you're not getting the engine started, you need to do this. And all of a sudden, like, proteins, you don't have enough protein.
Oh, yeah, it's all the hype at the time, isn't it?
Yeah. Get someone that you trust, and once you've got that trust in them, then just whatever they tell you to do, you go ahead and
don't trust in a coach or whatever, like, whether it's it doesn't even have to be a coach, you can just be an advisor.
I think that's why Bryson does so well with his gains and how he progresses, is because that he knows the science behind that sits behind it. So nobody can really force. He obviously has people there to help him. He knows what he wants to do.
Yeah. You see, like, and for what he's done in the past 12 months as well, like the amount of slack he got at the start, you know.
No.
How many people in the past have tried to improve like distance, and then look at Molinari. Won the Open, featured in the Masters.
Yeah.
It's like a world beater in the Ryder Cup. You know, he goes looking for a little bit more distance. I don't know if there's other things that's happened as well, but, you know, he definitely hasn't featured the last 12 months. So
exactly, I know. But so then you've come back to England. You're 21. You can now drive.
Yeah.
Off plus two.
It's a funny story, this. So, like, my Spanish handicap didn't cross over to the English system.
I was going to ask that, the transition. Yeah, go on.
So I come over thinking, right, plus two in England, I'm getting all the good events, you know. I move back on like the 1st of April, start the season, you know, get a good season planned and then build on from there. Yeah. So I come over and then they're like, right, you got to put three cards in. I was like, what?
Welcome to England, yeah.
Three cards, what are you talking about? So I ended up doing that. Put three cards in, all on the par. Comes back, I get a handicap of two or something.
No way.
What?
You shot all three on the par as well?
All three on the par, around Formby-Orr, which Kev knows.
Yeah.
That's why the system's so broken, isn't it?
Oh, mate. Like, the old system. Like, hopefully this new system will kind of clean that up a bit.
So did that impact your decision then to, obviously you said you were over for a year and a half, played the Northern Merit events, but that's stopped you from playing in the bigger events, I imagine. Did that force your hand?
Yeah, 100%. Because like you come over, you want to play English Am, you know, you get a good few events in the Order of Merit, get your handicap down a bit further, and then don't know what might happen. You know, you might get British Am, you might, you know. And then all of a sudden, like playing Northern, like just getting into the good Northern.
Yeah, you're off two all of a sudden. Like, what the fuck's going on here? So when you moved to Spain and you've come back, like, have you always been from Liverpool ways, have you?
Yeah. So I was born in Liverpool.
Yeah.
I actually moved to, like, funny, I moved to the Isle of Man as well when I was seven.
Been about,
haven't
you? Been about? Traveller, aren't I?
You should have went back the other man when you come back. You wouldn't have been locked down. Gandhi's out there playing golf every day.
No, I should have stayed over there with Tom. So I might have got a better handicap as well when I moved back.
Yeah, you should have preceived the pandemic about 10 years ago when you come back.
I know, yeah, fair enough, yeah. Fair enough. How old are you now?
I'm 26 now, so you turn 26.
Five years. Yes. Brilliant, that. I always stick my foot in it. Anyway, moving on. So you've taken the PGA professional route then, so talk us around the decisions for that and not just going straight into playing.
Yeah, so my family, they thought it'd be a good idea. Like, a lot of families only look out for the best in you, you know? So it's like always good to have a qualification or get something as a backup plan.
Yeah, of course.
So I decided to turn pro doing the PGA. Got about 3 months in, 4 months in, and realised how much like written work it was. you know. So my focus has always been like, I'm obsessed with golf, playing golf, like getting better at golf, the whole like process. And then all of a sudden I'm sat on a laptop writing an essay about how to sell Kit Kats.
I could tell you the thing about too about buying Kit Kats, like
those multi-pack deals.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so anyway, got about 4 months in, I was like, it's not working, you know. Like I wanted to spend the winter working on my game. I know a lot of lads kind of work it, balance it, but for me individually it just didn't work. Yeah. Like it was frustrating me. Didn't really enjoy school. So it kind of reminded me a little bit like that.
Yeah.
So I just decided to sack that side off, you know.
Did the fact that you finished school later in Spain impact that as well? Because you're going 18, you've only just got 3, and then you're 21, you're back at it. It's a bit, not much of a break, is it?
Yeah, and for sort of like, I didn't go to university either. So I didn't go like down the US playing in college and stuff. Didn't go down that route because I just like didn't want to play. Yeah, didn't want to like do the school side pretty much.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, I don't know if that impacted it a little bit. Maybe if I'd have got my 5 or 6 years playing and like give it everything and say, like, even now, if it doesn't work out, then I can always go back, you know?
Yeah, it's never too late to you're right. There's two ways to look at it, I suppose, because there's people that we've spoke to on the podcast who have done exactly what you said there, is do the PGA route, get that backup plan, and then concentrate on your golf. But then what you do then, if you're not putting the golf in full time for those 3 years,
those 3 years, it's like, especially like young lads, so you start doing your PGA when I did at 21, it's like 3 years of PGA at 21 gets you to 24. You've missed 3 years of hard graft, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You could be working on your game.
It goes back to belief, doesn't it? Like believing in your own game. If you believe that you know in your heart to heart that you're good enough to make it, if you put that effort in, then it doesn't matter about a backup plan, because you know you've got what it takes to make it. And if it doesn't work out, then at least you've given everything you've got, haven't you? It's good advice to people, definitely, yeah.
So, yeah. So from there, just decided to, play golf.
Yeah. And then, so then going forward from there, you've obviously sacked the PGA. You've then started playing every day and practicing. And then what do you do schedule-wise then, once you've actually turned pro?
So I was about 23 when I turned pro.
So 3 years ago, yeah.
When I turned pro, I was lucky enough as well that I was a member at Formby All when I was an amateur.
Yeah.
Went to Formby All and they were like, oh, you can start working here because you have to obviously do a certain amount of time in a shop.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So I was lucky there, so I got the opportunity to work at Formby Hall. So I'm still doing that now, just to kind of like earn some money, basically, to go and then kind of take a little bit of pressure off going and playing. I'm lucky where the team at Formby Hall, the guys who work there, they're quite flexible.
Yeah.
If I ever want to go and play an event, they kind of...
They'll cover you.
Yeah, pretty much. So the hours that I do as well are really kind of... Like, I do 7 to 11 in the morning, so that's it.
Yeah.
I'm free to go and just, like, work as hard as I can then. You know?
It keeps it ticking over, though, doesn't it? Like, it's a little bit towards something.
Yeah,
another thing.
As well, it keeps me humble. It's, like, it makes me want to work harder to,
you know?
Like, I appreciate everything that Formula's done for me, but it's not where I want to be in 5 years, you know?
and once your shift finishes 11 o'clock, it's not a choice of, oh, shall I go to the golf course? You're already there.
Exactly, you're there.
Yeah.
Clubs out the car and you're ready to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what does a day look like then in a normal, because I've played with you a few times and we've given you a spanking, but I'm sure it's a little bit different when you're a structured practice day.
Yeah, so... Say COVID, obviously, it's a bit tough, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. Normally 2017, 18, or whatever.
Just talking about your game and obviously what goes into your daily routine and practice and
pre-talk. Yeah, so I work 4 days a week. So on my work days, it'd be 7 to 11, I'd work. And then from 11 till 6, I'd stay at the golf club. Whether it be play 9 holes in the afternoon, do some work around like short game.
Yeah.
do some swing work, you know, put in up until about 6 o'clock, and then I'd go to the gym between 6 and 8, come home, and then like I'd either read, like,
wow,
always trying to learn. And then I do like an hour of mobility every night as well, and stretching. So like,
you don't like schoolwork, and you're coming home and reading. So you might as well.
I'm a student of the game of golf.
Students of the game of golf. I love it. There you go. Yeah.
Like, I'm always trying to get better. So like, if it means that I have to stretch while I'm watching the match or while I'm watching Netflix, then gotta be done on it.
Yeah,
it's good. It's dedication, isn't it? And it's hopefully it's going to show. Like, so going forward, then that's like an average day in the life of Hayden. What event? How's it gone so far with like EuroPro and all any events that you've been playing on the professional circuit out there?
Yeah, so like the jump to like, from turning pro and playing in EuroPro events at first was a bit of a shock, I say.
Yeah.
Again, it's like going back to when you're an amateur. I should have really learned my lesson in not focusing on what other people are doing, but
yeah,
hard, you know. So it's something like you kind of learn, but I've learned through experience and through getting a bit mature away from the golf course and kind of just worrying about me.
And how long has that took you to get to that level? Because the reason I ask is because when we're doing these episodes and we're speaking to people, you do find, like, Chris Hansen's a perfect example. Spent 3 or 4 years in and around the lower tier tours before he then breaks out. And it just seems to me that it does take a couple of years of, like, gaining that momentum and getting that
maturity. Like, your approach is perfect as well. Like, because although you're traveling, you're not getting the expenses of, for example, going and playing challenge tour events.
Yeah.
All right, it still costs a little bit of money and you still need the backing for your sponsors and stuff. But it's perfect because you go out, you're still getting kind of like the travel, you're staying away at hotels, you know, you're having to do like a full week plan. So you go on the Monday, play a practice round, Tuesday's pro-am day, so you kind of can't really get on the course, so you got to find something to do. And it'd be prep.
Yeah.
And then tournament starts Wednesday, Thursday, and then there's a cut, and then Friday is the event. So I've not played any European Tour events yet, but it seems like from what I've heard from podcasts and talking to European Tour players, it seems like a really good like mini tour to build up and learn.
Yeah, we were speaking to Matty Baldwin earlier in the week, and he said he went and played the Alps Tour. And he said that just was perfect because it taught him to travel. So it's pretty much singing from the same hymn sheet as yourself, really.
Yeah, yeah. It's I've looked at, like, obviously it's something I've looked into, the Alps Tour as well. It's just like, it's not a path I've gone down. You know, it's definitely I've got a couple of mates that play out on there, and it's definitely an option. And from what they've said, they're only saying good things as well. You know, so I think it's each individual.
Yeah, it's one of them. It's, are you single though? Because if you're out there and it's your name, there might be somebody else saying, Hayden, where are you?
That's it. Oh, yeah, and especially when she's a fiery Latina, you don't want to be pissing her off. You know what I mean?
Definitely not. So what? Obviously, you've give us an insight into obviously your daily routine. But is there anything specific you work on? You say obviously you study the game. On a daily basis. So I imagine, are you studying the different golf aids technique?
So it's like, obviously through now with Instagram, you follow the right people on Instagram, you can get so much information through that. I'll talk to Gareth. I'm sure he's sick of me kind of like chewing his ear off about different swings and different thoughts and stuff.
Yeah.
But at the minute I'm trying to stay away from technique to a degree. Because I have looked into that much, that you get too much in your head and you kind of stray a little bit too far away.
Yeah.
How often are you seeing Gareth as well? You're saying you're picking his brains there. How often are you actually getting a one-to-one lesson?
So like, I'll see him obviously every day at Formbjorn, and I was just like, pick his brains, have a coffee or whatever. But for me to see him like lesson, just me and him together, it'd probably be like once every 3 weeks, once a month.
All right.
Yeah.
It's not really regular, but at the same time, it's enough to kind of stay on top of things and, you know, make sure I'm not straying too far away from.
Is that something you'd advise to other people? Like a once a month is probably.
I think for each individual, and depending on what stage you're at and how happy you are with your swing and how you're hitting it, depends on how often you see a coach, you know?
Yeah, I know
what you mean there. Say, when I first went to Gareth, I wanted to see him every week because I felt like I was swinging it crap. And, you know, like, I wanted to learn as much as I could in just a short amount of time.
Yeah.
I suppose it all depends on how well you can take on the information, because you can get told to do something. Three weeks, 4 weeks pass by and you're like, I forgot what happened at the last lesson there. you're taking a week off, you don't play.
So, yeah, you, like, with golf as well, if I have a day off, it's like starting from scratch.
Oh, are you one of them, are you?
I'm one of them. So, like, there's a lot of lads I know that can have months off and sing it perfect. So yeah, it's quite frustrating in that aspect. But if I have a week off, then it's game over.
Yeah. So, just constantly at it.
You just got to stay at it. And then, yeah, obviously, if you're doing a lot of work, you can kind of stray offline a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
So that's probably why I see Gareth probably like every 3 weeks, just in case any bad habits creep in. Yeah.
So apart from Gareth, then, if anyone else in your team, like psychology wise, you mentioned the fitness coach. There's any mental coaches about?
It's funny. I'm not seeing a psychologist at the minute. I've kind of gone down the route of reading as much as I can, getting as much information as possible, whether it be golf related or
Bogey Boys podcast.
Bogey Boys podcast, yeah. or just anyone's kind of any athlete's story.
Yeah,
I'll listen to, because I think I listen to a lot of audio books. Yeah. Any athlete story always has something relating back to that you can relate to golf, you know?
Yeah,
definitely.
It'd be like everyone works hard that obviously makes it. And then there's all different things that they've taken from their hard work that kind of puts them in the right place.
Brilliant.
I think it's good to listen to other people's stories and how they got there, and then you can kind of relate it back to yourself.
You know? Take inspiration from them as well, can't you?
Yeah.
At the same time, it's like with the when you're talking about, you can read all the books and all the different things on Instagram or wherever you're reading it about the technical of the golf swing. But then I think with the mind as well, if you had someone that you believe in that you could lean on and then you trust them techniques, my opinion is that it'd fare a lot better on the golf course than thinking, oh, McGregor said this and Michael Jordan said this.
Definitely need it in the path, don't you? It's like what you said there with it's like going online on YouTube and looking at all the different swing videos and then got 101 ideas in your head.
Yeah.
It's having one clear path.
Specific to you.
It's definitely something I'm kind of looking into, and I listened to your podcast earlier with Lee Crumbalone.
Yeah,
we're on commission basically, so we're just trying to get you over.
How many times we mentioned the podcast in the podcast? So yeah, I listened to that, and it was like he was talking about obviously him and his colleague, how like their path and what they're doing at the minute. So it's definitely something I'd like look into, and whether I end up getting in contact with them.
Yeah.
If you use the code BogeyBoys10, they give you 10% off.
Fucking hell. Jesus Christ. So, growing up in them 3 years, then you played Euro Pro, you played Challenge, not yet European Tour. And then this year, what you playing right this year?
So, I got a category on Euro Pro. It's not a full category, as I didn't do well enough at Finals Q School, which was in October.
Yeah.
A little bit frustrating coming away from that. You know, obviously, like you work every day towards kind of planning for a full season. Mm-hmm. And then like the week after the final qualifying, mate, I was just like, you know, you think the world's over.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I didn't want to like talk to anyone and didn't like, but obviously
you get down on yourself in situations like that, do you? But like,
hard not to, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you sacrifice, like I give every minute of the day towards like the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard in the moment to not be dead hard on yourself, and you know, but obviously you talk to a few people, whether it be mates or coaches or colleagues or whatever, they get you to see the big picture. And then I've got a good enough category to where I should get in half the events, play well in the first one, I'm in the rest of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not, not the end of the world. I've still got plenty of other events to keep me busy with. You know, like you guys spoke to Chris Hansen as well. His 2020 tour.
I think we promised
we'd be playing a couple of them events as well, didn't we?
We need to stick to our word, aren't we? No, we will. We're going to enter the Marriott one,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah. There's a decent court.
Yeah, we're going to go and play there, yeah, as amateurs.
Decent.
Rip it up.
We might get grouped together, boys.
Hopefully. Yeah. Don't want Kev knocking it past you, though. That's the problem.
Oh, man.
I could win that event and turn pro. You never know. So 2020, anything else on the cards?
Yeah, so...
All right.
A little domestic going on, boys. Yeah, so there's another tour that kind of came onto the scene last year, is Clutch Pro Tour.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, Clutch, so they started up, I think it might have been last year, might have been the year before.
Yeah.
Didn't play in any of them last year, but I'm looking to play in a couple of them this year. So they're kind of more further abroad, so... further away, not abroad, all in UK, but yeah, it'd be good to go and play a few of them.
Where are they? Where are they based?
The Clutch, a lot of them are down south.
Right.
I'm looking at playing a few kind of Birmingham way.
Is that Jamaica? Will you play Jamaica as well?
Jamaica's in London, so like around London as well. So I've actually finished my schedule for the year and I've not planned to play any Jamaicas.
Yeah,
just because there's that many 2020s and like obviously the EuroPro events that I did get in, like I've got a busy enough schedule to where I don't really, like I'm not going to play in them, you know.
Yeah, so, you set your plan up already. Yeah.
What's the price looking like EuroPro? We overheard, and it's like so expensive. Like, so a week on the EuroPro is what, 700-800 quid or whatever. Yeah, what's the week on like on the 2020 or the
entrance fee in 2020 is £99.
Sound,
so yeah, you think 100 quid. The lads put pretty much all of that into the prize pot as well.
That's brilliant, yeah.
So the guys like Chris and Adam are unreal, you know. They only set up last year, and I only say good things about what they did.
You can see it's doing well because of that, yeah.
Yeah, just like they put the players first. I know it's like cliche and that, but. They look after you, you know. So like,
what of that needs to happen, though? I think.
Yeah, 100%. You think as well. It's kind of important to give guys the best, or girls in this case as well.
Yeah.
Best opportunity to push forward, isn't it? So.
Yeah. And Chris has been there through that sort of route and probably thought that is just a difficult way for anyone to be like. So
yeah, and he's seen like a hole in the market as well for him to kind of fill. You know, so he's like fair play to him.
Going forward, what are you looking like funding wise? Are you just working a form bureau? Have you got a sponsor?
So like obviously with all the events I've planned, like working at form bureau is not gonna cover everything, is it? So like so I've put a few sponsorship packages together from what I can offer like people and got all that ready to go and send out to as many people as I can really.
How does that work? I've never heard of that before. So you will, because we've asked this question in the past. I think we spoke to a couple of players where when you get sponsored for your first year or second year and that comes to an end, how you go about looking for more funding for the rest of your career.
So
how does that work?
It's a funny one because you think like the first couple of years when you first turn pro, it's like people are wanting to help you out and stuff. But if you haven't quite like reached your potential or like shot the scores that you wanted to shoot and done well enough, then obviously you still want to push forward and you're still working hard, so you still need backing. So I've decided to do packages to where I'd offer companies or something like a set amount of things, whether it be branding, social media posts, a return on my earnings, whether it be a percentage of my earnings.
Yeah.
And hopefully, like, if a company is to invest in you, it's another way for them to market their business, you know,
yeah.
And for them to obviously help out someone who's hungry and raring to go, you know. So
it's so nice to see that how much you want it still.
Yeah.
Like if I had enough money, I'd sponsor you, basically, what I'm saying.
I'll wear Bogey Boys hats anywhere, boys. So
we're gonna have a few of them ready soon, actually.
Oh, mate, I'll be straight in my basket.
Brilliant.
You're still hungry, you're still at it, you're still looking for sponsorship, you haven't been thrown off. But going forward, how much more are you going to give it? Like, you're going to do this year, are you going to go for the same plan next year, or are you going to reevaluate after each year?
It's just interesting one, isn't it? Because you can only take it for, like, obviously I can't plan right now for how I'm going to feel.
No, exactly. Or
what results I'm going to have over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a difficult one, but as it stands at the minute, I'm giving it 100%, if not more, hungrier than ever, still working as hard as ever, you know.
Yeah. And in addition to the tours that you're doing, will you do open qualifying and will you do...
Yeah, exactly. So they're also...
Q School as well.
Yeah, so I've not entered European Tour Q School as yet, as a pro or as an amateur. So it might be something I'll look into at the end of the season.
What's the reason for that?
Just kind of focused on playing like Europro and different events. And then when it's got to Q School, got into time to enter in it, it is quite expensive. I think it's like £1,200,
£1,400.
Yeah. So I've not really been confident enough in my game to be like, right, I'm going to make it on the European Tour. You know, there's no point in entering it unless you think you're going to get through, is there?
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
But
yeah.
The only reason I asked that is because Tom Gandy, I don't know if you've listened to that episode, but it's a similar story. He was playing Euro Pro, but he went to the European Tour Q School, made the cut, and he missed out by one shot to get to the European Tour. He made through all the events, I think six rounds, was it?
Six and then four.
But then because of that, he got full playing rights on the Challenge Tour, and then because COVID hit, he's then got a few events on the European Tour last year.
Because it all worked out.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely.
It's definitely worked. Like, obviously, a lot of guys do it. I've just not really got the opportunity or just not done it yet. So, it's get to the end of the year, it might like something to look forward to, isn't it? So.
100%. Yeah.
That's
no.
It, definitely.
No, definitely.
That's 10, right? What is it? 6 rounds, then 4 rounds, slogging it.
Yeah.
You do first qualifying, I think that's 4, and then second stage is 4, and then final 6. So it's
yeah.
Hey, what do you think? It was just a bargain for £1,400, isn't it?
Yeah, what is it? Like 14 rounds of golf?
Yeah. You can add in, yeah.
With the boys to Spain.
Yeah. If you want a caddy, mate, I'll come over and do it for you, no problem. Get on the bag.
Yeah, definitely.
It usually gets to this time, and I'd ask the player to play in the Bogey Boys Golf Day, but you're going to just have to play anyway. So,
well, I'm going to be there, aren't I? So,
that's it. Yeah. just knock around your local, yeah.
Play a 5-ball up the first.
You should be, you're tipped as the favourite.
Oh, don't be saying that. Work even harder now.
We're going to drive you on. But no, it's been great to speak to you, Hayden. Obviously, we wish you the best of luck for the future. And once the golf courses get back open, I can't wait to get down there and have a little knock with you again.
Yeah, it's right, boys. Like, I appreciate, obviously, the opportunity to come on. And, like what you guys are doing is, like, sick, you know? Just providing content for people to listen to or just, like, give guys the opportunity to give their story of how they came through the ranks. So,
yeah,
I just want to say thanks for having me on.
You're going to make me cry.
First person who's ever said anything nice about the podcast.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm crying.
Lovely stuff. No, appreciate it, mate.
Thank you
definitely.
Very much, Hayden, yeah,
and as Kev says there, we wish you the best of luck this year, mate. And yeah,
cheers, lads.
We'll see you on the European Tour very soon, I imagine.
You know that.
See you later, my mate.
All right, mate. You take care.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
right here, so. Oh, we topped it.
Whoa,
he cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go.
Yeah.
Data iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.